Today's show is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, sharing nothing but the best in whole grain nutrition and committed to their mission of good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network, roughly from roughly 12 to roughly like 12:45 every Tuesday from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Joined as usual with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. How you doing, Stas?
Good.
We got Dave in the booth.
Good.
And good. I like that. Like, don't even ask.
Just following suit.
It's just good. It's good. You do anything interesting, Dave?
In life?
In this food, not food related, some sort of issue that you had over the past week?
Let me get back to you.
All right. And we have with us today, for the first time ever, the entire Booker and Dax, current Booker and Dax team in the studio with us. We have Matthew, whose last name I'm going to withhold because he's the customer service representative for Booker and Dax, and I don't want you to be able to dox him and find him in the real life. You know what I mean? Unless he so chooses to out himself.
Booker and Dox.
Booker and Doxing. What's up, Matthew? How you doing?
How's it going?
How's that Spins All customer service treating you?
Rough.
Hey, look at the answer for him. How's it going over there? Yeah?
Rough.
I see it, yeah.
Yeah? But are you seeing the life melt out of him?
Yeah.
Nice. So how did you come to Booker and Dax? What were you doing before?
What was I doing before? I was working in data science.
Data science.
Yeah.
Wow, what's that French for? what is data? Just explain to people what data science, because to me, data science can either be like what I used to do, which is design databases for lawyers, sure. Or it could be I'm going to troll data to try to make up some new epidemic that doesn't really exist. Sure. It could be either of those things, or it could be a good use of data science.
It wasn't the best use. It was credit cards.
Oh, credit cards. Were you mining it so that you could get more money out of the people, or so that you could find people who weren't paying so you could get them to spend more money?
All those and fraud.
Fraud.
Yeah.
Fraud.
That was the only one that felt redeeming to do.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so do you have a word for people who believe that credit card fraud is a victimless crime?
Probably right.
Wow. You used to work in that business and you don't have like a good like so one of the businesses I used to work in, I can still instantly spit out like all of the rhetoric. You can't.
No, there was no fun lingo, no.
No? They didn't instill in you a hatred of credit card fraud?
Just working on it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, from my years of working with lawyers, I can tell you I still hate asbestos companies to this day. I still hate them.
More than you hate asbestos?
Asbestos is just a rock, my brother. Asbestos just, you know, it's...
Oh, we're getting philosophical.
Asbestos, you know what asbestos used to be called, don't you, Dave?
I don't.
It was called the magic mineral. You know why it was called the magic mineral?
Give you wings.
Ooh, no, but who knows? Maybe Red Bull will also turn out to be as horrible as asbestos. No, it doesn't expand. It doesn't contract. It lasts virtually forever. It's fairly cheap. It can be molded into, you know, almost any variety. It's a mineral that comes in fiber form already. It's as though God made fabric out of rocks, you know, and it's heat proof. It's amazing stuff, except it kills you, which is the problem. Okay, now, we also have the reason why any of you have a Spinzall at all. We have direct from Hong Kong and Shenzhen. We have Chris Witters, who is the Booker and Dax representative in China and in Hong Kong. How you doing, Chris?
Fantastic.
Yeah, and so Chris, I'll let him tell a little bit of his story, but Chris, is now like a... I don't know what you describe what you do. You beat people's heads together until they do what they need to do. It's kind of what you do.
Loan
right?
shark?
Well, except you don't need to. You only need to pay back that guy because he's going to break your knees otherwise. I mean, like, it's Chris more like takes people who should be doing their job and aren't, and then just sits there and like harangues them until they do it. Was that? I mean, like, what is that even called? What's that job title? Like, how would someone find someone like you if they needed to find you?
look up in a directory for an asshole.
Family show, Chris. Family show. A-hole. A-hole.
A-hole.
A-hole. And, but before that, Chris was a chef in New York at Walt Disney World. What did you do at Walt Disney World?
Regional chef.
Yeah, nice. All right. So how did you get from chef into product? Was most of your product design on the kitchen side or not product design, but product shepherding, whatever we call this job that you do? Mainly kitchen?
Mainly kitchen. Yeah. Massaging.
Massage parts?
Sometimes it seems like it.
It's like a, you know, where we're going to open the new bar is all massage parlors, but it's foot massage parlors. And so, like, you're actually, like, Matthew, you would be sitting next to Nastasia, like in close proximity, both of you getting your feet massaged. And for me, that's unpleasant. I would not want to do that.
Doesn't sound great.
Would you want to do that? Would you want to do that, Nastasia?
Doesn't bother me.
You wouldn't want to sit next to, what about if it's next to May?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, but right. I mean, you don't get to choose.
Women get pedicures. How's that different?
A pedicure is like a more like a functional.
They also massage your feet.
I wouldn't know. You can add up the number of pedicures I've gotten in my life on zero hands. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And the number of manicures I've ever gotten, you can add up on zero hands. But I do enjoy a head massage at the hair salon. What about people do foot massage over there, like straight up regular foot massage over there in Hong Kong or no?
Oh yes, quite a bit.
Yeah,
quite a bit. You can see massage parlors everywhere.
Well, yeah, but I mean like regular feet massage, just feet.
Yes, more or less.
All right. So call in all of your Spinzall related questions, Booker and Dax related questions, equipment manufacturing questions, or really any questions too. 718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128.
We do have a caller on the line.
Caller, you're on the air.
We did have a caller.
Hey, sorry about that. Hey. No, I had a mute button on.
Yeah, yeah.
First off, great that the Spindle guys are there because this is a Spindle question. yeah. First off, big ups to Matthew because he helped me with Spindle problems via email. So well picked.
Nice.
But my question regards an old recipe from the bar, which was the Champion Justino.
Yes.
I've done you know the various. Justinos from Liquid Intelligence, but obviously the mushrooms don't have pectin. So how do I work with that? What's the technique?
That is an excellent question. As a true politician would say, that's an excellent question. I'm glad you asked that question. Next question. No, that recipe was actually Nick Bennett's. That wasn't my recipe, and. Okay. And because I made it a habit to only ever do demos of, like, my specs, my personal specs, like, whenever we had to do a demo of it, he always did it. And I honestly, I don't know how they did it. I'm pretty sure they started with dried shiitakes. And I think, honestly, it was less of a Justino and more of an infusion. So, like, so what they would do... I don't think we bought powdered shiitake. I think we bought just regular shiitake and maybe did like a pulse blend into it and an infusion and then just spun out the solids. Because the trick with so as you rightly point out, mushrooms are not made of pectin. They're made of chitin. And I don't believe they did a chitosol chitosan thing. And plus also chitin is not charged in the same way that chitosan is because it hasn't been treated. So my guess is that it works much more just like a settling out, the same way that if you were clarifying a bitters, for instance, like or
right.
a spice oil, which, by the way, is not something we push a lot, but it's a good use. Like if you're making like a curry oil or something like this to get the spices out, because you're not really solubilizing. When you blend a banana, you're putting banana juice into it or dates, and you're putting solubilized pectin into it that you need to knock out. And in this, I think it's much more of a suspension / infusion, but that's just a guess. Next time we have Jack Schramm on the show, I'll try to remember to ask him to put out the – or Nick Bennett. We can call Nick Bennett and have him give the straight spec for it. At some point, I want to post all of the old Booker and Dax recipes up I owe actually Blopins, who gave me some beer to spin in the Spinzall, a recipe. I think he wants the Thundernut, which also is not one of my specs, but I have to post that.
Thundernut.
Was the Stirred Bird from one of the menus your recipe or no?
Stirred Bird was not my recipe. Stirred Bird was, who's that? That was either, I can't remember whether it's Jack or Nick. I mean, remember, Nick, anytime something is stirred, I want to say Nick Bennett worked on it because Nick Bennett's whole, like, mission in life was to take all drinks and unshake them. And so, like, he did stirred versions of everything. But that might have been a bar-wide thing as well because the entire bar was interested in kind of the, you know, as everyone was at that time, the Jungle Bird and different takes on it. But in general, I mean, that's not like it's a delicious drink, but it's not my it wouldn't be my go-to mentality jump off point. Not that I mean, I'd be proud if it was my spec. It's delicious. But in general, like, you know, I'm not a let's see if we can dork with this to get that. I'm more of a I have this weird ingredient. What am I going to do with it? Kind of a guy. Yeah. But I can also get you that spec. I really think
that was
like,
really my roundabout way of asking you for the spec. But
yeah.
See that it's not your drink. During
the
all good.
During the break, I have
cool.
the specs.
And then one quick technical note for whoever runs the board. Everyone sounds fine on this phone interface except for Dave, who sounds like he's running through a cheap fuzz pedal.
Oh man,
that's because he's really loud.
Well, okay. Here. How about this? I'll tell you what. I love a cheap fuzz pedal. It's like, who makes those? Peavey? Remember Peavey?
I would probably go with the cheapest Boss ones from the 90s.
That's,
would be
yeah.
The terrible ones. Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Do you know what was a really not good bass pedal? Is I used to have, you know, the wah-wah pedal? You familiar with wah-wah pedals?
Yeah.
They feel good, wah-wah pedals. I had a bass wah. And I just never, like, I never loved it. Like, it took too much chunk out of the bottom of my bass for me to actually enjoy it. Even though I wanted the wah-wah on the bass. You like wah-wah, don't you, Matthew?
Go for a good
wah-wah. Wah-wah.
Who doesn't like
good
wah-wah?
Yeah, Chris, you a wah-wah fan? Not wah-wah hot dogs, not wah-wah at the store from Connecticut.
Connecticut? Is that where, that's not where it originated.
Well, I don't know where it originated. That's where I used to go to it.
Ah.
Yeah, anyway.
Color?
Wah-wah. There's another caller?
Yeah.
Caller, you're on the air.
Dave.
How you doing?
It's Matt from Mystic.
Oh, Jesus, Matt from Mystic. We owe Matt from Mystic a freaking Spinzall. Okay, Matt. Okay, so Matt from Mystic. There are a couple of people in the United States where it got delivered, but then someone stole it, or it got delivered, but the person was in another country at the time. We have one or two people like that. But Matt from Mystic, who I have personally met and spoken with, enjoyed, had a beer with, I think we had a beer on the 4th of July.
That's right.
For some reason, it is his Spinzall that is sitting in freaking Carson, California, and we don't know why it hasn't been shipped from Carson. Now, what I'm going to do, Chris Witters, when are we going to get more units into the country?
It should be October 3rd.
Right, but we're just going to ship you one from the we have the first next group of ones that we can send. So we'll just send you one direct from Hong Kong on a separate thing because I don't know what the hell happened. I literally every day I send an email to the shippers in China and I say to them, what is up with this order? And then they somehow conveniently never respond to that question. Chris, am I right on this?
That's right. And I'll personally ship that product for you.
There you go. So we,
all right, great.
We don't have, like, it's like, it's not even an issue of like, it, the frustrating thing about it is, We literally don't have any more or didn't have any more units to send other than like, you know, the protos that I have, you know that we have at the house. And so we haven't been able to send, like, just so there's some people who also who need repairs. We haven't been able to, RMAs on units if things wrong. And so we literally, in the past couple of days, Chris has been here in the U.S., but his office in China has gotten a hold of a batch of, like, 10 from the factory that we're going to use for returns that people need fixings on and for you, because it's just freaking ridiculous. Am I right?
That's correct.
Yeah. And I don't think it's helpful, but I personally hate the people who are shipping, and I wish them ill, and I hope that they don't have success in life, and I want bad things for them. I'm not going to go so far as to say I want bad things for their family, because I don't believe that that's a good thing to do. I don't think you should blame people's families for what people do, but close to that. What do you think, Chris?
We're on the same path.
Yeah, yeah. So do you just want to make me feel bad, Matt from Mystic,
no,
or did you have another question?
I swear I wasn't calling you up to give you the business.
All right. But do you have a question, or you just want to know where you're – rightly want to know where your spin zone is?
No, I figured you'd let me know. But, no, I was – are you familiar with the concept of, like, the Vitamix whole fruit juicing?
The Vitamix what?
It's like – they call it whole fruit juicing. Basically, I'm wondering if a Vitamix is good enough – to juice certain things for the Spinzol when it eventually shows up at my door.
Okay, so first of all, when you say good enough, I'm trying to crush it into that mentally. I'm trying to crush that sentence into the Cher song, but I don't think I can. Maybe Dave in the booth can do it for me. Somehow get that Cher song into that.
Wait, what song?
Are you strong enough? You know, that Cher, like, whenever anyone says the word strong now, Cher pops into my head. You know, I shouldn't probably say this. What's wrong with Cher? You don't like Cher?
I don't really have a strong opinion.
Nastasia has some share stories.
But you said, probably shouldn't say this was correct.
That's what I'm saying. You probably shouldn't talk about it. Yeah. Sure. I shouldn't say it, so I didn't. I just let people know that there is a story there, which is, good. Lee, you're still the international woman of mystery there, Nastasia. So the answer is both yes and no. I mean, when you're juicing citrus, you want to use a citrus press, period.
Right.
You know what I mean? When you're juicing apples, VitaPreps are not the way to go. It's for some reason, apples are so high in pectin that when you just juice them, they don't clarify as well for some reason. I just never had good luck with blending apples in a blender. I always use a Champion for apples, but almost everything else... Right, and I guess ginger. I use the Champion. If you're doing straight horseradish juice, I use the Champion. But I actually recommend horseradish Justino in vodka over doing straight horseradish juice. It's much better, and then you can just use the VitaPrep. So I also don't recommend VitaPrepping, or really, if you're going to clarify, I don't really recommend juicing ginger. Ginger juice doesn't clarify very well because of the starch that's in it. But for most fruits, right, with the exception of apples and citrus, yeah, I would say, if you were thinking, should I get a VitaPrep, the answer is always yes. They're great to have. I've never, as I've said, I think on the air several times, I've never met anyone who was like, you know what I should not have bought? I should not have bought that VitaPrep. That was a bad move. You know what? It turns out I don't like blenders. That doesn't happen. I've never heard of that happening. Like, maybe, if someone bought a VitaPrep and they went bankrupt the next day, maybe I should have waited before I bought the VitaPrep. But let me give you another hint. Like, when someone closes a restaurant, right, with very, very few exceptions, like, they have auctions is what happens. When very, very few exceptions, you go in there and there's no VitaPreps. So if you just go to restaurant auctions, you might think, well, maybe these restaurants didn't have VitaPrep. No, it's because nobody leaves the VitaPrep behind because everybody wants one. You know what I mean? It's like, Chris, what do you think? The VitaPrep, everyone wants a VitaPrep. Everyone wants a good blender, right?
Of course they do.
Yeah. It's why you also never find Paco Jets. I literally once bought a VitaPrep at a restaurant auction because what happened is they didn't really close the restaurant so much as they took the entire team, picked them up and shipped them to Vegas to open a restaurant on the double quick. And so, all the stuff was left in the kitchen. And I was like, all right, I'll buy the VitaPrep. And that's how I got my very first VitaPrep. $60. It was a great deal. Bad bearing, but guess what? I know how to fix bearings. Anyway, so the answer is yes. For many things, the VitaPrep is a fantastic juicer. But the Champion's also a good thing to have around because Champion's really good for if you ever want to like grind cocoa nibs to start doing kind of chocolate. It's a very good pre-grind. The Champion is very good for a pre-grind on nut butters. Nut butters. Nastasia hates making nut butter. Remember when we used to just sit there for hours at the French Culinary, like first robo-cooing and first like championing,
first picking out the bad nut.
Here's another secret for you, Matt from Mystic. Here's what people do. They buy nuts, right? And then they just take the can of freaking nuts and they dump the nuts into whatever processor they're going to use it. And if you ever take the time to look at a batch of nuts, every batch of nuts has a bunch of bad nuts in it. And it only takes a couple bad nuts, to ruin the whole batch, especially pistachios. So if you're going to buy pistachios, literally, I spent the money on this because I wanted people to know. I was like, just take a can of nuts, dump it, and make a nut milk with that. And then take a can of nuts, pick out all the nasty, shriveled, yellow, crappy-tasting ones, and make a batch with that. And tell me that there's not a dramatic difference between the two. And, of course, there is. So you should always pick over your nuts before you're going to use them. Right, Stas?
Right.
Exactly. Anyway. So, I don't want to get you in trouble over there in Mystic with buying a bunch of equipment, but I would definitely go for the VitaPrep.
Yeah, no, I got a Vitamix. I was wondering if the champion would be necessary for Spinzall use.
Well, you're already in it for Spinzall and a VitaPrep. What the hell? Champion is like, you know, the least of your problems, brother. Just like, you know, what does a champion cost now? It's $150, right?
I think it's closer to two, but it's more a space issue for me.
Right. The thing about it is I'm a big believer in keeping as much equipment on the counter as you can, because you're gonna use it more if it's on the counter, which is true. However, for something like the Champion Juicer, you never have like a refrigerator full of apples, and you'd be like, you know what? I'm either gonna juice this or not. So, you know, oh, the juicer's out. I'm going to juice all those freaking apples. That doesn't happen. So what happens is you're like, I'm going to go make apple cider today, and then you go and you juice it. So what you do there is you go get, you know, you're going to pull it out of storage. So it's okay to have something that you know is only for certain tasks in storage, because, you know, it's never like, am I going to make pasta today? I don't know. I always have flour, but if my machine's not out, I'm not going to make it. It's not one of those kind of situations. I will say this. I have used for apples side by side the Breville juicer and the Champion juicer, and the Breville juicer has it easier to use than the Champion, because the Champion is also like a good like forearm, and like, you know, if you ever seen the movie Over the Top with Sylvester Stallone, it's a good kind of over the top workout, because you're like shoving apples in like one after the other. In fact, like I've said it before on the air, Nastasia and I just for fun did so many apples in a row that, remember, Nastasia had burned the unit out, and you were just putting wet towels over the Champion, and they were like boiling hot. And then when we finally turned it off, the magnet had been melted out, so it didn't have a safety on it anymore. And that sucker still kept on going. That's why I love the Champion. I love anything that is willing to melt itself into oblivion just to produce juice for you. I mean, it's just like, it's like to me, like everything in the world should be like that. Everything should be willing to just turn itself into a melted puddle of mess while it still is producing juice. Anyway, and I think all things should produce juice. Where was I? Champions, apples. Oh, the Breville is easier physically to use, but it produces a juice with more pulp in it. So it has so on the one hand, you might like that because it's a higher body of juice. The juice has like a more of a kind of a viscosity to it. But I found that when I was making cider, so I'd make a 5-gallon batch of cider out of a Breville versus a 5-gallon batch out of a Champion, because I don't have a traditional press, that I got a higher clear yield out of the Champion than I did out of the Breville, because I had a much higher amount of pectin in it, if that's helpful to you.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also, while we're on the subject of old Booker and Dex cocktail specs, the Struggler was one of my favorites, so maybe I'll take that off the air.
Ooh, the Struggler. Okay, so maybe during the break, if I have time, I have the specs on my phone. If I can find them on my phone, I can try to get the specs. So what do we have now? We have the Stirred Bird, the Struggler, and the Champion Justino as requests. Yeah. You know what? We should just get the old, like, we should get, like, a cross-section of the old Booker and Dax bar team on the radio sometime and just go over it. It'd be fun. Get, like, Nick, get Jack, get, like, a bunch of people who are still in New York and those guys. Anyway, Souther Teague, he's supposed to come on this show, and I'm supposed to come on his show, but he's always working during this. Anyway, whatever. We'll work on it. All right, so Struggler. It's on the list of ones. Maybe I'll try to find it over the break. Hello?
He gone. He took it off the air.
All right, cool. All right. So, Dave, you want to take a break and come back with more cooking issues?
Sure.
All right, here we go. Bob's Red Mill has been milling whole grain since 1978. One of the nice things about Bob's Red Mill is it's the only that I know of national supplier that's easily available for lots of interesting, hard-to-get grains and other seed products. So, you know, before Bob's Red Mill became widely available, you couldn't go get something like quinoa very easily, or you couldn't go get spelt easily in small quantities. But now you go to any one of the huge number of stores that carry Bob's Red Mill, and you can get smaller amounts of these really interesting, fun things to play with. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast. All right, we're back. I'm not that good. Like, I was hoping I could be like, I could just go into my phone and type specs and then have the specs come up, but no such love. So, you want to answer some actual questions, Nastasia?
Yeah, you going to go back 2 weeks?
At least 2 weeks. I mean,
maybe
I don't know
just
how.
2 weeks?
I don't know. I have questions on my machine, and we'll answer them. So Scott wrote in, I own a smokehouse with the ability to smoke at a wide range of temperatures. I've read a lot of Mariansky's Home Production, which is the home production of quality meats and sausages. I like that. I've never read that book, though, so I can't comment on that book. But I have a love-hate relationship with the word quality, because quality can be low quality, as in all of us, low-quality individuals. Right, Nastasia?
Yep.
That's the kind of quality we have.
See eyes.
Yeah, low-quality individual. You know, we saw someone in Boston with a low-quality individual shirt and with an enemy of quality shirt.
Really?
Like, in, yeah.
At Harvard.
At the Harvard, yeah. Dax actually wears the low-quality individual shirt all the time. And you know that I got an Instagram that there is a taco place in Milwaukee that has an enemy of quality taco.
Mm.
Which I...
What's in it?
It's basically, it's just you choose a, I don't know why the name of it went out of my head, because I know the name. It just has like, it's like meat and cheese of your choice. You don't want what they chose because you don't like good things because you're an enemy of quality, which is fantastic. I need to go back to Milwaukee. Stas, we'd like to go back to Milwaukee sometime, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
By the way, I'm going to just say this right at the get-go. For like meat curing questions, we should just have, because we have so many of them, and I'm not like, you know, an expert in it, we should just have like either like call in or in the studio our meat curing buddies in and just do a, you know, let everybody know like 2 weeks in advance we're going to do a meat curing episode, call in all of your meat curing stuff, and you'll see why as I talk about this, because I think that even if I don't know the answer, I could probably elicit some good answers out of people who actually do it for a living. So we're talking now about Mariansky's book, Home Production of Quality Meats and Sausages. But unless the book outlines an exact procedure that I want to follow, I have trouble using that book. It varies from densely technical to vague and often seems contradictory. Now, this is a problem I think that all technical cookbooks have. Like having written a book that has like technical stuff in it and dealing with technical issues all the time, like... If you're a real practitioner of something, right, you kind of know what you know, you know what you do, and you're probably pretty good at it. If, you know, if you're good enough at it that someone's asking you to write a book about it, you're probably pretty good at it. But when you're writing a book, you feel the need to say a bunch of external stuff to what you do all the time, and a lot of times you know so much about something that it's even kind of difficult for you to write about it. And because there's so much nuanced information in your head, it's very difficult, very, very difficult. And thank God I have my wife to help me do this. But like to draw a coherent through line through your knowledge to help somebody else learn. So things can be contradictory. And if you had the dude or, you know, whoever, if you had them in front of you for a half hour, they could explain to you why it's not a contradiction. But it's very, 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 very hard to write a book where that's the case. And I think that in general, there's also, especially in meat curing, especially because there is a health safety aspect involved in it, where people are worried that they're going to kill you with botulism or kill you with something else, or that they're going to have you use too much of a curing agent or whatever it is they're worried about, from not just a liability in terms of that they're going to get sued, but a liability that they don't want anyone to misuse the information that they have and get hurt. I mean, I worry about that, you know. So because of those two things with meat curing is an especially difficult thing to write a book about, which is why I think it's probably would be nice to have like a group of people on who do it professionally, and then just kind of pester them about, okay, what can you say, what can't you say, what do you do versus what you're allowed to, you know, talk about. Anyway, because as you say, I have no formal training in science or food, but I usually want to know per meat type, per pound, salt and cure content, like one or two. Although, honestly, you're almost always using the short acting, the nitrite, unless you're doing like whole cured cuts of meat. You should pretty much always be using nitrite and not nitrate. I mean, I think, and like, you know, you can usually tell it's the non-professional older recipes that have nitrates instead of nitrites. So I would be a little leery of anyone that uses a nitrate recipe for anything other than like a ham or you know, a very thick cut of meat. How much smoke can I safely apply at what temperature? And then you say, for example, my favorite andouille is always smokier than mine. My smoked turkeys vary tremendously in moisture and smokiness over the year, but not knowing how all these variables affect each other has prevented me from solving these problems. Brine and cure would probably protect the turkey enough for me to put it in the smokehouse instead of a grill, but I don't know how to make that safe. And by the way, like if you read, like you remember we had Meathead on the show, mm-hmm. and he has a thing on amazing ribs, and he's very worried about people doing low temperature smokeouts because he's worried that you're going to encourage the growth of bacteria, botulism specifically in the smoke. And the real issue with it is, right? But if you nitrate it, you're not going to get botulism with nitrites because they can't grow up. But whatever, let's just not get into that right now. The real problem is that it's very difficult to maintain an actual temperature on a piece of meat because of evaporative cooling. So it's very hard to judge what the actual temperature on a piece of meat is, whether you're keeping it in the kind of a safe zone or not, unless you're keeping it high enough to ensure that there's no bacterial growth, even with evaporative cooling. So it can be somewhat difficult, which is why they have interesting new smokers that are controlling the whole atmosphere, including the humidity, that are kind of cool. Anyway, are there any good sources or rules of thumbs for controlling these variables to formulate my own cooking processes? I get overwhelmed when I research these issues and find it hard to believe blogs. I'd like to control for these variables like I do for daiquiris in a spreadsheet. Sorry for such a general question. I'm still enjoying the show and won't buy a sous vide book until yours is out. Well, you should buy anyone's book. It's going to be different. Don't worry about it. But I think we should just get some people on the show. I think that in general, it is true that different cuts of meat with different fat contents are going to respond differently to salting. They're going to respond differently to the application of heat in terms of how long it takes the heat to go through them. But in general, there's a relatively small number of bugs that you're trying to kill. When I say bugs, I mean microorganisms. Relatively small amount. There's multiple hurdles, right? You have salt, you have nitrites, and you have salt, nitrites, and temperature. And like those variables are like, you know, you're pretty much always trying to hit similar numbers on those things. And then the question is like, what's the right answer? So I think, you know, we can say, okay, look at an oily fish, a not oily fish, you know, chopped up meat, not chopped up meat, you know, lean like a beef versus like something fattier like pork. And we could try to hash those numbers out, but I'd rather do it with some experienced cure people. See whether anyone in the booth wants to have a show like that where we get, I don't know, like Johnny or like Olympia Provisions back on and just do like a cure episode. See whether anyone's interested in that.
Yeah, actually somebody is talking about that right now.
All right, we'll try to set it up.
Would like to combine koji with my sausage and cured meats. No idea how to start. There you go.
Well, for that, we'd need to get Rich back on the our cook quest back to do Captain Koji, to do some koji stuff. Captain Koji. Nastasia's like, koji. She has her koji face on.
What's your? Oh, is that what that is?
That's her Koji face. It's a smile, though.
It's a smile.
It's a smile. It's a smile, the Koji face. Tim writes in, for my next equipment purchase, I'm looking at DIYing a vacuum chamber for infusions, primarily, possibly hacking my old crock pot as a low-temperature cooking bath and building a carbonating rig for cocktails. Thoughts on which project to tackle first. Do the vacuum chamber. Actually, you know what? Well, carbonation is so easy. It's not really a project. You just buy the stuff, womp it together, and it's done. The vacuum, I wouldn't do a crock pot into a circulator. It's just, I don't see the point. Like, you know, once you buy a crock pot and you get the PID, and it's never going to be as easy or as much fun as using a real circulator. And you can get a real circulator now for a couple $100. It's just, I don't see the return on time investment there unless you really, really want to. I mean, it's not like the average person who's doing a DIY on an immersion circulator, it's not like they're learning how to. You're not even learning how to tune a PID looper. You know, like the ultimate, like if you're like, hey, listen, I'm interested in control and control, and I want to write a PID loop. I want to learn how PID works. I want to like learn the math behind it and like actually like tuning a system. And then it's worth doing. Like, but you could also just do that, like, theoretically on the computer. Like, you know, you can get a version of... Anyway, my point is, I don't think at this point that that's as interesting a project as the DIY vacuum chamber is good, because if you're a DIY person and you have a DIY vacuum rig, you can use it for food, you can use it for drink, hell, you can use it for plaster, you can use it for like degassing like urethane if you want to build things, or like casting resins. I use my DIY vacuum stuff for all of those things. You know what I mean? Like when I'm doing prototypes, you know, I now have actually a much fancier, you guys know about the, you know those epoxies that have the long tube with the static mixers in them, so that you, when you press it, it comes out of the tip mixed. It looks like a bunch of blades next to each other. You know what I'm talking about? Inside So I have a super fancy resin gun like that. That's like that. It's like. What size would you say that is? Big. It's like you. It's like you're holding a big thing. It's like if I was a 2-year-old holding a caulk gun. That's the size of it, right? If you can picture me as a 2-year-old holding a full-size caulk gun, that's the thing. And it hooks up to a pneumatic thing, and it mixes without adding any air, urethane resins, and deposits them without air, so you don't need to do a degas on the resin. And it's hooked up to an air compressor, so it doesn't even take any. You're literally like, you're just like, and it's like, and no, nothing. You know what I mean? I still do pressure casting because, you know, whatever. But anyway, yeah, cool. So I would do a vacuum chamber. The trick with a vacuum chamber is choosing something that won't crush. So round Bain Maries, stainless steel round Bain Maries, typically do not crush. Square and rectangular Bain Maries and hotel pans crush like mothers. They just crush. They crumple. In Europe, they make a special one that doesn't crush, but guess what it is? Expensive. So I would stick with round. Here's some other things that don't crush. All clad pots don't crush. And so what you do is you just get like a refrigeration vacuum machine. They have oil in them, so they kind of stink, and they're a little bit loud after they've been running for a while. Put oil in it, and then you just stick a rubber tube. You get a piece of like a Lexan, and you drill a hole in it, and you put a fitting on it with a barb. You put like a little piece of like you adhere some adhesive silicone or rubber to the Lexan. Cut a hole. Make sure you cut a hole in the silicone so you can see through it. And this is just the easiest way. There's nicer ways, much nicer ways. But then that can fit on any round thing that and you can get a 1 foot square piece of Lexan. You know, like 3/8 or 1/2 inch or something from McMaster Car or on Amazon. That's not, you know, not hard. And then you put that on, and it fits on any lid. It acts as a lid. You can fit on any pot or Bain Marie, and I use that all the time. The one square thing that doesn't crush is six pans. Small six pans tend not to crush. Like the 6-inch tall six pans, they're so small and chunky that they tend not to crush. And so you can do those. But yeah, I'll totally do that. And you can have a lot of fun with that. I have a lot of fun with that. I still use it because, you know what? A vacuum machine, I'm not going to stick resin in my actual, mini pack machine. And a mini pack machine is like thousands of dollars. And you can do this whole thing for like $100, $125. Anyway, so that's what I would do. Yeah. Anyway. What do you think? Anyone? Anyone? Any thoughts? No? No thoughts?
Sounds good.
All right. Julian wrote in. I'm sure Julian's already gone to Hawaii, but I'm flying to Hawaii with friends soon. This is like 5 months ago, Anastasia. Somehow this kid's on getting shuffled around. And detest. I like anyone that doubles up on detest is a friend of mine. If you double up on how much you hate something, that's a strong move. Detest the free my, and free is in quotes here because it's so detestable that actually they should pay him. You know what I mean? So it's like free in the sense that they're not charging you money, but the aggravation is as though you paid money, right? I feel that's what the word free here is in quotes. The free Mai Tais that they give you during the flight. I've never been to Hawaii. Do they give you a free Mai Tai on every flight to Hawaii?
No idea.
If you're flying like Pentecostal Air, do you get a free Mai Tai on that?
Doesn't seem likely.
It doesn't seem likely. Although Nastasia once had to fly to Europe. We were both flying to Europe, and she flew Emirates, and I thought that was going to be a dry flight, but she came off that plane soaked in liquor. She was like pickled like a freaking cherry when she got off that plane. Wasn't that you that was flying Emirates that time? And you were like, oh, like, I have to fly Emirates, and it was awesome?
No, it wasn't Emirates. It wasn't Emirates.
But you know, you remember what I'm talking about. Yeah. Anyway. I was hoping I could bring some stuff with me on the flight to assist in making a quality, fun, tiki-like cocktail during the flight. However, in order to keep the free world safe, as you know, the TSA has graced us with a few rules. So here's the TSA rules, right? Which I'm sure, Chris, you know, as being an international traveler that you are, Hong Kong and U.S. Can't bring booze. Need to use what they have on the flight. Now, that's just to be legal. I mean, everybody on freaking Earth knows that the actual rule is that you're allowed to bring as many of those little travel bottles that you can fit in a quart container, a quart Ziploc bag. So my general, what I do 100% of the time is I go and I buy travel-size things. I rinse them, which is hard. You ever try to rinse out shampoo bottles, guys? It's very hard. Like the aromas that they put into those things, and you try to buy like opaque bottles so people can't see into it. Head and Shoulders is a classic because it's white bottle, and it seals pretty well. But to get that smell out of the bottle is a pain in the ass. But anyway, pain in the butt is what I meant to say. Family show. So that's how I bring Kiesel Sol with me, Kytosan, SPL when I'm flying around, because I bring them in travel size bottles because I don't like checking luggage. I don't like checking luggage because I once had a bunch of checked luggage that I needed for a demo get lost by the airline, and they didn't get it to me in time for the demo. So now I only like to travel with stuff that I can carry in the carry-on to make sure that I can do my, you know, whatever I'm doing when I land. So you can, the truth of the matter is you can bring liquor on the freaking airplane. You're just not supposed to bring liquor on the freaking airplane. That was a long way to say that.
That's right.
So yeah, any single container is 3.4 ounces. One quart bag. I don't know that you're allowed to bring an actual quart, but it has to. All of your bottles have to fit in a single quart bag, right? Which is not the same thing. So with four people, you get four quarts. Okay. Don't want to annoy my airplane neighbors with a lot of stuff or loud noises, ice shaking. You know what? You know, airplanes are so freaking loud that, like, airplane is so freaking loud that, like, next time you're on an airplane, do you remember Sam from CNN, Vidiot, his handle, Anastasia? He would come to the FCI every once in a while. He did a whole series where he was shaking on the airplane. He was using ice and actually just two plastic airline cups and using them as a shaker. And he was saying that no one had a problem with it.
A baby's rattle.
Yeah, I mean, think of what happens on an airplane. People are blowing their nose on you, basically. Like, you know, like, you can do all sorts of horrible things on an airplane. The sound of shaking a cocktail, I would be like, oh, thank God. You know what I mean? Thank God someone is doing something that I like on an airplane. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't think it's going to bother anyone to have a shaking ice on the plane. And don't want to bartend. Would like for people to be able to make their own cocktails. So there, that's why you don't want the shaking. If you want people to be able to make their own cocktails, right? So I would go with, here's what you have. You have a circulator, you have a chamber vac, you have a Spinzol, or should have it by now. Kegerator, but you're not going to, you can't bring carbonated stuff because you're not allowed to bring chargers on an airplane. And unfortunately, are the ones in the life vest CO2? I don't think they are. I'm not sure. You might be able to get a cracker and to raid the life vest for a charger, but I don't know what gas they use. And you, if you did, in the unlikely event of a water landing, you would be hosing whoever one you took. There is a way, if you bring your own life vest, by the way, you are allowed to bring the chargers for your life vest and one set of spares. That said, you know how many times I once went through a series where I flew a bunch of things and then only found out later that I had a bunch of chargers stuffed into a secret pocket in my backpack and they never found it. So, like, you know, I could have been infusing on that freaking plane or carbonating on that plane. But if you were to pull out a charger and the flight attendant was to see you, then you would be spread-eagled on the floor with, like, you know, a marshal's gun on the back of your head. You know, and, you know, maybe rightly so. Average bar equipment, home kitchen. So here's the thing, but you're not going to need any of that. Maybe you use the Spinzol. If you don't want to have them shake drinks, what you're talking about is a stirred drink, right? Or a built drink. So the easiest thing to do is to just make a really nice syrup for old fashions. Are you allowed to bring a Y peeler? I think you are allowed to bring a Y peeler on a plane.
Well, you can bring a pocket knife now.
Really?
Yeah.
Regular one? I bring one with no blade. I bring a no blade. But if you can bring a Kun Recon Y peeler, here's what I would bring. I would bring an orange or two. I would bring a Kun Recon Y peeler. If you're a cherry style of person, I guess you could bring some cherries. And then I would make, like, if I was going to do it, I would make out of my book the coriander syrup, like for a Cliff Old Fashioned. But you want Mai Tai. You want tiki. Ooh, see, I'd just do old fashions. So nice. How are you going to have someone make their own tiki style cocktail? Can't be done. Well, here's what I would do. I would make a lime cordial so it lasts, right? And so I have a bunch of, I gave some recipes, I think, last week or the week before on lime cordial, especially now that you have a, because what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to do a stirred version of a tiki. So you're going to go heavier on booze, lighter on the cordial, but cordial. And then if you really want to tiki it out, throw like a splash of pomegranate juice in. You can actually clarify. I have clarified passion fruit and pomegranate. The issue is you don't want to blend pomegranate, because if you blend the pomegranate, it gets bitter because the seed parts get blended. So what you do is just buy passion fruit puree. Just do yourself a favor and buy the freaking passion fruit puree. Then put the pomegranate in a container with it. Take a mortar and pestle, or like a muddler, smash the pomegranate seeds with Pectinex Ultra SPL, you spin that out, and you can temper that back with clary lime. You can make a really awesome, clear, kind of clear, tiki-ish, hurricane-ish, like syrup thing out of that. And then just put that into those freaking bottles, and then just, you know, gluggity-glug with the liquor on the thing. It'll self-dilute on that freaking airplane. It'll keep you going, going and going and going and going. Don't forget to add a little salt. What do you guys think? Think that's all right?
Or just,
why can't you just like mix club soda with something?
Right, it's a flight. It's a plane.
The guy wants a tiki freaking cocktail.
He can wait till he lands, can he?
Apparently, he cannot.
Just get drunk on the plane the old-fashioned way.
What's the old-fashioned way?
I don't know, like a gin and tonic and an Ambien.
Wow, I don't. You know what? I'm not a fan of the airplane gin and tonic. I'm a white wine on airplanes kind of a guy. I'm just, give me your crappy white wine and keep it coming.
What, like Sutterholm Chardonnay? Sounds great.
Ooh. Nastassi, what's your call on an airplane?
Yeah, white wine or red wine.
Red wine. Yeah, because red wine, I feel like it's going to dehydrate me more, and I don't want to be flying around with the red wine lip stain, and I don't want to go into that bathroom. That bathroom is a horror show.
Actually, the last time I flew, I did red wine mixed with Coca-Cola, whatever the Spanish call it.
What?
You never heard of this?
No, I heard that was a thing, Chris, in China a while ago. It was like Pepsi and red wine, right? Wasn't that a thing, like Pepsi and Bordeaux, like 10 years ago in China? I heard it was a thing.
I thought it was like a European thing.
It sounds like a terrible thing. Where, no matter where it comes from, it sounds like a freaking wretched idea.
Yeah, it'll get you drunk.
Not as fast as just the wine will.
Make it last.
Well, but you know, these are contradictory statements. Like,
well, how much red wine do you need to get drunk?
It depends on you, doesn't it? I mean, the thing is, like, you don't want to get dehydrated on an airplane, right? So you don't want any, like for me, I tend to feel more dehydrated when I'm having red wine, and so you don't want to get overly dehydrated on an airplane. And like I said, especially on it, I would consider Hawaii to be equivalent to an international flight because of its length. Is there anything more horrifying than an international flight bathroom? Anything? Is there anything worse than, like, hour 8 on an airplane in a bathroom, and like you're like, I made it this far, and everyone else has defiled that bathroom, done all sorts of horrible, terrible things. You've seen that one dude that shouldn't have eaten what he ate, and he's used that bathroom like five freaking times already. You've seen him, that one guy, and you know that by time two or three, something ain't right. You know what I mean? Something's not right with this man's behind that he has to use the bathroom this many times, and now I have to use it. So I just want to stay away from the bathroom at all costs. Nastassi, what's your feeling on airplane bathroom?
I don't care.
Really?
You don't go in public. That's the thing.
Do you have a phobia?
He has a huge phobia.
I do not like public restrooms.
Whereas, is it like a germaphobe thing or what?
It's not that I'm a germaphobe. It's just specifically restrooms. I hate public restrooms.
Whereas, it's a social interaction in a restroom.
Whereas Nastassia doesn't enjoy going to a place unless she uses the restroom.
That's
like
not true.
Nastassia will show up if she comes to your house for the first time. People, that's she was like, "Where's
true.
The restroom?"
That's not true.
She has to use it.
It's good to have a plan.
When she shows up at a restaurant, she's like, "You know what I'm going to use? The
I think
restroom."
Everybody uses.
You're like, "But you just used it on the bus."
Do you not wash your hands at a restaurant?
What?
Do you not wash your hands at a restaurant?
Usually, they have a thing outside. You know what I hate is like the reverse washing hands. If you go into a freaking restaurant, right, and you have to touch the doorknob on the bathroom.
Oh, he's getting heated now.
To leave after you wash your hands, why don't you just dip your hands in poop?
Just hold on to your towel.
Why don't you just poop if they have one? That's what I hate. Now all these people are like, oh, here's a Dyson for you. Here's a Dyson. And then like, you know, just dip your hands in poop.
Dysons suck.
Whoa! Don't be, the man's a billionaire. He'll fly over here. Like SWAT will come in and kill you.
You should have him on the show. He could talk probably for hours about his vacuums.
And what do you think about his? I don't know what he cares about most now. Air blades. He's an air moving individual, right? That's his thing.
He's moving a lot of air.
Moving a lot of air. All right.
All right, we got like a minute.
Ah, Jesus. I recently
sign off.
This is from Julian. I recently put a kegerator together and picked up a small half-gallon keg and was wondering if you had any recommendations for a good cocktail on tap, which would do well in the kegerator-type system, not degrade too much. Yeah. So if you're going to carbonate it, you make sure to get all the oxygen out so it's not going to oxidize. So if you're doing something that has a vermouth in it, do it that way. Also, because it's going to foam like a mother, choose something that works well with low carbonation. Like Negroni is a classic one because it can age a little bit as long as it doesn't have a lot of oxygen around it. It works well at various levels of carbonation and at various dilutions, and so it's a good kind of bulletproof drink to throw in that. And on that question, since Yao wrote in and said, I love making cocktails at home but can't reliably finish even the 375 milliliter bottles of vermouth. I've been just accepting dumping out a portion of every bottle as a sad fact of the single man home cocktail life. Been thinking of buying a chamber vacuum sealer for my kitchen. Would that be helpful here? Pour half the bottle into a bag, suck out all the oxygen, and throw it in the freezer. How long would you suspect that you could hold it? Also, just for Nastasia's demographic audience scorekeeping, yep, another single guy in his 40s, no kids, and a kitchen filled with gadgets that reflect that, including an empty space on the counter for my soon-to-be-delivered Spearzol. Ooh, man.
Single guy drinking vermouth.
I'm going to make a Spearzol next. Imagine that, a Spearzol. Wow, like a harpoon machine. That'd be intense.
That's how you get your meat.
So the issue with vacuum bagging is that as opposed to a glass bottle, vacuum bags are actually quite poor at gas permeability. So you actually get quite a bit of oxygen into those bags versus a glass bottle with a cap. So what I would do is get much smaller, like almost like eyedropper size bottles. Or, you know, 175s or something like this, and pour the stuff all the way up to almost the top and then screw it down, and then you're good, and you're going to be good from there on out. So you're not that's the way I would solve it, because glass is very good at gas permeability, oxygen permeability. That's what I would do. But vacuum bag will work. I haven't run the test to see how long it will stay, but you have to use a vacuum bag that's meant for the freezer and has very low gas permeability. That's the trick there. And you don't want to boil it too much, so you have to vacuum it when it's nice and cold. Okay, so...
Gotta go.
Okay, we have Matthew. Thank you, Matthew. Chris is here. Chris, what do you want to tell him about the units? Anything you want to say on the units on the way out, on Spinzols? People need to know?
No.
All right, cooking issues.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.